Well, let us turn in our Bibles to the Gospel of Luke, Luke's Gospel in chapter 18. Luke's Gospel, chapter 18. If you're using a church Bible, then I think that should be around about page 1052 or thereabouts. Luke's Gospel, chapter 18. And while you're turning to that, let me express my appreciation for your welcome and your invitation this morning. Luke chapter 18, and we'll read from verse 9 through to verse 14. Let us hear the word of God. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. During the past week, Alexander Lukashenko, the president of Belarus, gave what for him is quite an unusual experience, and that is he gave a press conference. In it, he spoke about the war in Ukraine, and there were no great surprises in what he had to say about that. But what was perhaps a little bit more surprising is that he gave an offer to host a meeting between Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, and Joe Biden, the president of the United States. Now, whether his offer will be taken up is another matter, but if it was, can you imagine what that meeting would be like? On one side of the table, you would have a man who is Ukraine's biggest backer in terms of military aid. On the other side of the table, you would have a man who is Ukraine's biggest enemy and aggressor. On the one side of the table, you would have a man whose position historically was known as the leader of the free world. And on the other side of the table, you would have a man who in recent times has demonstrated that he is the leader of the not-so-free world. In terms of global politics and worldview, the two men are poles apart. They are two men who see everything from a very different perspective. And so that being the case, can you imagine what it would be like if you had the opportunity to be a fly on the wall at that meeting and the opportunity to listen in to what the two men have to say? Does being a fly on the wall at a meeting of such vastly different people, does that appeal to you? Well, if so, then let me take you this morning to a meeting between two men who were even further apart. Two men who were poles apart in every respect. And let us be a fly on the wall. Let us listen in to what they have to say. That is the occasion that's described for us in Luke 18. And the first thing that we see as we come to that little parable is we see two men who were very different in the estimation of others. Two men who were very different in the estimation of others. Now, this section of Luke's Gospel begins way back in chapter 9, verse 51, where we read of Jesus resolutely setting out for Jerusalem. And as you follow Jesus on that long journey to Jerusalem, you discover that he meets all sorts of people. And that is why his audience is constantly changing. For example, if you just flick back a page, you'll see that through chapter 17, you'll see that his audience changes four or five times within that chapter alone. It begins with him speaking to his disciples, chapter 17, verse 1. By verse 11, he's addressing 10 lepers. In verse 20, it is the Pharisees. Verse 22, it is the disciples again. When you get to chapter 18, at the start of chapter 18, it's still the disciples. But by the time you get to chapter 18, verse 9, the audience is those who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else. And what you also discover in this section of Luke's gospel is that in addressing those various groups of people, Jesus often told little stories, little parables. He told one to his disciples in the opening paragraph of chapter 18, and now he tells one to this very different audience in verses 9 to 14. And here is how this little story that Jesus told, here is how it began. Verse 10, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. Now, what we have to appreciate is that these two men were at opposite ends of the spectrum as far as reputation and public opinion were concerned. The Pharisees were the religious leadership within first century Jewish society, and consequently, they played an important role in the moral and religious affairs of the nation. For example, it was they who were responsible for ensuring that society towed the line on social and moral and religious matters. And so if Jerusalem television was hosting a discussion on marriage, divorce, abortion, euthanasia, and any other ethical issue, it would be a Pharisee who would be invited in to defend the morally conservative viewpoint. The Pharisees were responsible for encouraging people to fulfill their religious obligations. And so it's not surprising to read in verse 10 about this Pharisee going up to the temple to pray. The temple is precisely where you would expect to find this man, and praying is precisely what you would expect to find this man doing. The Pharisees were considered by others to be the religious backbone of the community. And so in view of the fact that first century Israel was a very religious society, here was a man who was highly respected. Here was a man who was very good in the estimation of others. But then in sharp contrast to him, there was that other man who went to the temple that day, the tax collector. Now, when you and I hear of this tax collector going up to the temple, we may have in our minds a picture of an employee of the Inland Revenue attending church on a Sunday. And consequently, the idea of a tax collector going up to the temple might sound perfectly reasonable to us. After all, why shouldn't employees of the Inland Revenue attend church? And I'm a visitor here. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you do for a living. But if you do work for the Inland Revenue, then you're very welcome here this morning. But if that is the picture that we've got in our minds, then we have failed to appreciate the significance of what is happening here. Because what we have here is not an honest employee of the Inland Revenue trying to do an honest day's work for the good of his country. That is not what we've got. In fact, what we have here is the exact opposite. These tax collectors, they were employed by the occupying Roman authorities, and so they were treated with suspicion. They were considered to be traitors before they had even collected a penny's tax. Can you picture how someone from northern France would have been viewed during the Second World War if they had been found to be collaborating with the occupying German forces, and not only collaborating, but using the collaboration to make a fortune at the expense of their fellow countrymen. Can you imagine how that Frenchman would be regarded by others in the town once they discovered what he was up to? Well, that's precisely what people thought of first century tax collectors. They were hated, they were despised, they were ostracized by the rest of society for being traitors. And in addition to being traitors, they were also crooks, because it was normal practice for a tax collector to extract far more tax from the people than they were required to do. They set their own level of commission. And where do you think that extra money went? It went straight into their pocket, tax-free, of course. And so, not surprisingly, the tax collectors had a very comfortable lifestyle while most other people were on the breadline. The tax collectors in first century times, they were ruthless, they were immoral, they were corrupt characters, and everybody knew it. And consequently, people would have been shocked to see a first century tax collector go up to the temple. If they had seen him go into the local pub or the local betting shop or the local brothel, they wouldn't have batted an eyelid. But the temple, that was the last place first century people expected to see their tax collector go. Such was the reputation of a tax collector. And so when we compare this Pharisee and this tax collector, we see two men who were very different in the estimation of others. But then as the story continues, we also see, secondly, we see two men who were very different in their estimation of themselves. Two men who were very different in their estimation of themselves. Now, in spite of the enormous contrast in the reputation of these two men, they found themselves in the same place at the same time, and that place was the temple of all places. And having gone through the doors of the temple, what did those two men then proceed to do? Well, the Pharisee, we're told in verse 11, he stood up and he prayed this prayer: God, I thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector here. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. Here is a man who obviously has quite a high opinion of himself. And as he prays, we discover that he's come to that opinion by drawing a comparison between himself and other people. And what kind of people has he used for the purposes of his comparison? Was it some of his fellow Pharisees? Of course not. The people that he has selected for the purposes of his comparison were the robbers, the evildoers, the adulterers, the tax collectors. In other words, he's drawn a comparison between himself and the notoriously bad people of society. And by doing so, he's ended up being very good in his own estimation of himself. But what about the tax collector? What did he do during his visit to the temple? Well, verse 13 tells us that he stood at a distance. We are told today that body language reveals a lot about a person. Well, it certainly did on this occasion. This man is too ashamed to lift his head and look up to heaven, and so he stands there looking down to the ground, and out of remorse for all the bad things, the wrong things that he has done, he beats his breast and he says, God, have mercy on me. A sinner. That is this man's estimation of himself. Please note, he's not in the slightest bit concerned about the things which other people get up to. Instead, he's concerned about himself. He's concerned about his own actions and his own attitudes. As far as this man is concerned, that was more than enough to be concerned about. And as he thinks about all of that, he cries out, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Or perhaps more literally translated, God, have mercy on me, the sinner. As he stands there thinking about his sin, it seems to him as if he's the only sinner in the entire world. Do you see the contrast between these two men in their estimation of themselves? The Pharisee struts into the temple with his head held high, and he proceeds to tell God how wonderful he is. Whereas the tax collector stands at a distance, hangs his head in shame, and acknowledges to God his sinfulness. Two men who were very different, not only in the estimation of others, but also two men who were very different in their estimation of themselves. And the question I want us to consider this morning is, which of these two men are we like? Which of these two men are we like? Please note, I'm not asking which one we are like in terms of our reputation amongst other people. I'm asking which one we are like in terms of our estimation of ourselves. I'm not asking what others think about you. I'm asking, what do you think about yourself? What conclusions have you come to concerning yourself? Your actions, your attitudes, your track record. And in response, you may be thinking to yourself, oh, that's a strange question. I've never really thought about myself to that extent. Well, if that is what you're thinking, then can I say that now would be a good time to start? And the reason I say that is because the verses which surround this little story, the verse at the beginning and the verse at the end, the verses which surround this little story make it clear that what we think about ourselves is very important and of huge significance. And so that being the case, where would you put yourself on the scale of tax collector to Pharisee? Where would you put yourself on that scale? I'm not asking where other people would put you on that scale, because you know as well as I do that what other people see is often not a true picture of what we really are. What other people see is often the nice, pleasant, respectable, and religious facade that we put on as we leave the house, especially on a Sunday morning. What they don't see are the things that we do within the secrecy of our own homes. And worse still, the attitudes that we have within the secrecy of our own hearts. Other people don't see those sort of things, but you know about those things, and so do I. And I suspect that if we are to be honest this morning, we would all have to confess that there are things about us which are not very impressive. Aspects of our lives which, if others were to know, would leave us embarrassed and would leave them much less impressed. But however uncomfortable that would be, it would be a more realistic estimation of them to have of us, would it not? And more importantly still, it would be a much more realistic estimation for us to have of ourselves. But can I emphasize that if we are going to come to that realistic opinion of ourselves, then it's vitally important that we compare ourselves against the correct standard. The reason the Pharisee never came to a realistic estimation of himself was because he compared himself against others, others whom it so happened were outwardly much worse than he was. We can all do that, and we can all look reasonably good and feel good. For example, a young lad comes in from school and says, Mummy, I got 43% in the exam. Tommy got 33%, and Jamie got 23%. How bad is that, Mummy? What about Philip? Asks his mum. Well, he got 63%, and Edward, he got 73%, and William, 83%. Isn't it interesting that the young lad was keen to tell his mummy what Tommy and Jamie got, i.e. the ones that made him look good? You'll always find someone who appears to be much worse than you are, and therefore make you look good and make you feel good. You'll always find someone to do that with. That's what the Pharisee has done. But what's the point in doing that? What's the point in doing that if we are simply deceiving ourselves about ourselves? How much better to have a realistic view of ourselves by comparing ourselves against a true, an objective, an absolute standard of right and wrong? And that is the one that our Creator has provided for us. He's given us a law which says that robbing and adultery and blasphemy are wrong. But it also says that pride and lust and anger and envy and jealousy are also wrong. He's given us a law which demands that we love the Lord our God with all our heart, our soul, and our mind, and that we love our neighbor as ourselves. That is the benchmark which our Creator has set for us. That is the standard that we will one day be judged by. And therefore, that is the standard that really matters. And if we compare ourselves against God's standard, then I suspect we would all end up with an opinion of ourselves which was much more realistic, an opinion of ourselves which was more like that of the tax collector than of the Pharisee, an opinion of ourselves which sees ourselves as sinners. And regardless of what other people may think of us, it is then and only then that we have come to a correct and a true and a realistic estimation of ourselves. And more importantly still, it is then and only then that we have come to appreciate God's estimation of us. Which leads me to my third point this morning. And that is, we've seen two men who were very different in the estimation of others. We've seen two men who were very different in their estimation of themselves. Thirdly and finally, we see two men who were very different in the estimation of God. Two men who were very different in the estimation of God. Now, the fascinating thing about this story is that whatever differences there were between these two men as they entered the temple, and as we've seen, there were huge differences, but whatever differences there were between them as they entered the temple that day, there were even greater differences between them as they left the temple. Can you believe that? And why do I say that? Well, in verse 14, we hear Jesus say this concerning the tax collector. He says, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. Yes, you heard it right. It might have taken you by surprise, but you heard it right. This man, i.e. the tax collector, rather than the other, it was this man who went home justified before God. What Jesus is saying is that it was the tax collector rather than the Pharisee who returned home that day in the right with God. As the tax collector walked home that day, he was no longer guilty in the sight of God, whereas the Pharisee walked home in the exact same condition as he had come to the temple, and that condition was a guilty and condemned sinner in the sight of God. And so what we have at the close of the story is two men who are very different in the estimation of God. And the reason? Well, says Jesus in verse 14, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. That is why I said earlier that our estimation of ourselves is very important. The Pharisee tried to exalt himself, not only in the estimation of others, but also in the estimation of God. He not only assumed that he was much better than everybody else, he also assumed that he was good enough for God. And it was to highlight the dangers of that assumption that this parable was told. Verse 9, don't forget the audience. Verse 9, this parable was told to some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else. It was to such people that Jesus told this parable. And as this man approaches God, his confidence is in his own righteousness. His confidence is in his own morality. His confidence is in his own religiosity, in his own goodness, his own good deeds. And as far as he is concerned, that is all he needs for his acceptance with God. Whereas the tax collector, on the other hand, he humbles himself. He knows perfectly well that he's rotten through and through. He knows that he's rotten to the very core of his being. He knows that if God is ever going to accept him, then it will need to be entirely on the basis of God's mercy. And that is why he prays, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. But what is even more interesting is that the word that is translated as mercy here in verse 13, it's not the usual word for mercy in the Bible. Instead, it is the Greek word hilasterion, which elsewhere is translated as propitiation, a word which means the removal or the quenching of divine wrath. You see, as this man was standing at the entrance to the temple, he would be able to see in the distance the temple altar. And on that altar would be the remains of a sacrifice. A sacrifice which had been made for sins. A sacrifice which had acted as a substitute for sinners. And as this tax collector thinks about his sinfulness, he realizes that his only hope of ever being accepted by God is on the basis of sacrifice. It's on the basis of a substitute taking the wrath and the punishment that he himself fully deserved. And so he prays that God would be propitiated towards him. He prays that God's anger will be diverted and that on the basis of sacrifice, God will accept him and forgive him. God, have mercy on me. What a contrast. Do you see the contrast in confidence as they approach God? One is trusting in his own righteousness. The other is trusting in the mercy of God demonstrated in a sacrifice for sins. And it is that contrast in the confidence of the two men that leads to vast difference in the God's estimation of them. Having confidence in his own righteousness, the Pharisee walks out the door and returns home a guilty, condemned sinner. Whereas having confidence in the mercy of God, the other man returns home a forgiven and a justified sinner. And so the question we need to ask ourselves this morning is simply this: where is our confidence? Where is our confidence this morning? What are we relying on? What are we trusting in? You see, the problem with having a high opinion of ourselves is not only that it's usually way unrealistic, it also leads to a misplaced confidence. If I think that my moral and religious credentials make us much better than everybody else, then the chances are that I will be trusting in those moral and religious credentials for my acceptance with God. And if that is what we are trusting in this morning, then let us learn from the experience of this Pharisee in the story. If, like him, You're trusting in your own goodness this morning. If that is what you're trusting in, is if that is where your confidence lies, your own goodness, then can I say that you, like him, will return home from church a guilty and a condemned sinner. That is the solemn lesson of this story. Everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. And he who humbles himself will be exalted. And therefore, if you and I are ever going to be accepted by God, then we'll need to come to God in the same way as this tax collector did. If you and I are ever going to know the forgiveness of God, then we'll need to tread the same path of humility that the tax collector trod. And on hearing that, you may be thinking to yourself, hang on a minute, just hang on a minute. Surely you're not suggesting that we put ourselves in the shoes of that immoral and unjust man. We're respectable people, you might be thinking to yourself. Respected in our families, respected in our community, respected in our church. And so surely you're not suggesting for a 1 minute that we classify ourselves alongside that crook. Yes, that is precisely what I am suggesting. And the reason I say that is because although you may not be the crook that he was, you are the sinner that he was. And until we see ourselves as a sinner who deserves nothing other than divine judgment, we'll never know God's forgiveness. We'll never be justified by a holy God until we are trusting in God's mercy rather than our own merits. We will never experience God's salvation. That is the solemn lesson of this little story. The wonderful lesson of this little story is that by trusting in God's mercy, a mercy which has been demonstrated supremely in sacrifice, and not now the sacrifice of a lamb in the temple, but the infinitely greater sacrifices that those lambs in the temple pointed forward to, and that is the sacrifice of Jesus Christ upon the cross, that final and perfect sacrifice for sin. That sacrifice where the judgment and wrath of God against sinners was dealt with and satisfied once and for all. By putting our confidence in the mercy of God as demonstrated there at the cross, you and I, no matter what our track record is, no matter how ashamed of it you may be this morning, no matter how embarrassed you would be if it was to be put up on the screen, by trusting in the mercy of God as demonstrated at the cross, you and I can know the pardon and the forgiveness and the acceptance with God that this tax collector knew that day. Trusting in God's mercy alone, not in our merit, trusting in God's mercy alone, we will walk out that door and return home this morning as a pardoned, forgiven, justified sinner. As we've worked our way through this little story that Jesus told, we've seen two men who were very different in the estimation of others, two men who were very different in their estimation of themselves, and because they were very different in their estimation of themselves, they ended up being very different in the estimation of God. And so the question is, which of these two men are we going to be like this morning? The Pharisee or the tax collector? Which of these two men are we going to be like?